thank you for taking the time to listen to this life-changing message from the Ministry of Faith Bible Chapel. We hope this message will encourage you in all parts of your life. At the end of this message, you will hear more information on how to contact our church family, as well as directions for you to visit us for any of our worship services. Until then, join us for the service in progress.
Floating down the street, my flip-flops, and kids, and we ended up having fun. We were soaking wet. It was crazy. But we're in the middle of a series called The Great Three. And it comes from the passage of Scripture in 1 Corinthians 13:13, where the Apostle Paul wrote, "Now these three remain, faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love." And Pastor George preached three messages on faith. He did one on hope, and then last week Pastor Gary did the one on hope, hope for our nation, that Christ is the hope for our nation. Today's the last message on hope. I want to start by reading about a story, tell you a story that happened December 17th, 1927. There was a U.S. submarine that was off the coast of Massachusetts, and it was rammed by another ship, and it quickly sank. And the entire crew was trapped in this submarine at the bottom of the ocean, and ships rushed to the scene of the disaster to try to see if they could help, and we don't know exactly what took place on the sub. We know the sailors were probably being as brave as they could be as the oxygen was running out. And there was a diver that dove down to where the submarine was at, and he had the old, you know, diving gear of 1927, and he put that metal helmet next to the submarine, and he heard a tapping noise happen. And he heard in Morse code, slowly the question came, "Is there any hope? Is there any hope?" And that same question is what many people today are asking. Is there any hope? Is there any hope for my situation? Is there any hope for my life? Many people today are struggling with addictions, and you don't know if you'll ever break free from this addiction. You don't know if you'll be able to break free from what it is that you struggle with on a daily basis. And people feel that and they think, is there any hope for change? Many people are depressed. And depression is that feeling of hopelessness. It's the feeling of despair. And people that have suffered from that, there's a question that people ask, is there any hope? People are in difficult relationships, difficult marriage, or difficulty with their kids or somebody. And they're saying, is there any hope? Is there any hope for this? Maybe today you've been betrayed by somebody. And in that depth of that betrayal and that pain, it's causing a feeling of hopelessness in your life. We know in the financial climate of where we're at now, things changed almost overnight for many people. And financially, people are wondering, is there any hope? Can I get a job? Am I going to ever find employment again? How are we going to make ends meet? Somebody else is in sickness. Listen, if you're a Christian today, I want to start out with this quote from Charles Stanley. He's a pastor of a church in Atlanta, Georgia. If you turn the TV on the weekend, you'll find him. He's on about 12,000 stations. But I remember early in my Christian walk hearing him make a statement that I wrote in my Bible, and it impacted me. And he said, "It's okay for the Christian to feel helpless, but never hopeless." I like that. We're gonna feel helpless in our life. There will be times where we feel helpless, and we should, because we're dependent upon our Creator. But hopelessness should not be in the vocabulary of the Christian. The people who don't have hope are those that are outside of Christ, and they need to come into a relationship with Christ to have that hope. So let's give a working definition for these two words real quick. Helpless is to be unable to help oneself, powerless, or impossible to control one's circumstances. You ever felt helpless before? I remember feeling helpless one time. The most helpless feeling I ever had was my freshman year of college. And I was driving home for something Christmas break or whatever. And as we were driving home, my college roommate had a 1971 Ford short bed Bronco. And you guys remember those things. Those were cool. Some people still have them. It's 1971. And we were outside of Eagle Vale, and I wasn't a Christian at the time, and we just started talking about accidents and what would happen and things that had happened in people's life. And so kind of immediately we buckled up in thinking about that. And it was just outside of Eagle Vale, and he had a roll bar and seat belts. And as we came around a corner, I remember I was in the back seat. There was a guy next to me and two in the front. And he had a console, and I remember I asked him to put some music on. So he dug through for a cassette, right? You guys remember those things, cassettes? Some of you, I gotta say, 8 tracks. But it definitely wasn't, I don't know if CDs were invented then or not. But anyway, open up the console, and he's there, and the road curved, and he looked up, and he overcorrected. And as he overcorrected, I heard him go, "Hold on." And as we held on, I remember the vehicle turning and being in the back seat here and seeing the pavement of the highway right there, the glass shattered, and we rolled. And as that we rolled the first time, the tire jack in the back seat hit me in the head. And so I covered up like a boxer, and as we began to roll, I counted the number of times we rolled. It was like slow motion Matrix. We were just boom, boom. It was 7 times we rolled. And if we wouldn't have had a roll bar and seatbelt, we would have been like dice in a cup, just bouncing around. But thank God we had put our seatbelts on and had that roll. We ended up upside down in a ravine. And there was toiletries everywhere. Our clothes were all spread out. I mean, it looked like a disaster scene. And we all unbuckled and kind of fell out of the vehicle. And in shock, we just started cleaning up. Well, you do weird things when you're in shock. And you thought I could control the circuit and clean up. And I remember feeling just so helpless in that moment. And then to get out, it was like, are you kidding me? How did we survive this? But then there's hope. The word hope is this. It's the anticipation of something good. It's not a wish. It's not blowing out birthday candles and hoping for that new Tonka truck. It's the confident expectation of God's faithfulness. It's a confident expectation that God will be faithful to who he said he would be. Now, I want to read a story this morning found in John chapter 5. And it's a story about a man who definitely felt helpless, probably hopeless, and in his encounter with Jesus. All right, I'm going to read out of the New International Version, okay? And it says this: sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for a feast of the Jews. Now, there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by 5 covered colonnades. Here, a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat, and walk." At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and he walked. I'm going to stop there. The background of this passage, this man waited outside of the pool. And there some of your translations might have said that there was in this pool, they waited for the angel to come and to swirl the pool of water. And the first person that got in would be healed. So there was this race to the front of the line. And it was actually a false belief in this mystic pool, a false belief in this pool. And Jesus wanted to come and show this guy who had been sick for 38 years, your hope's in this pool, but your real hope has showed up. The person of real hope has now showed up into your life. Stop looking at this pool for the solution to your problem, and look to me. So Jesus shows up and he met this guy right where he was at. Listen, today, if you feel helpless, and in that helplessness, it's causing you to feel like you don't have hope, I want to tell you today, Jesus will meet you right where you're at. So I want to say this morning. When I feel helpless, there's a couple things I need to do. When you feel helpless, there's two things that we can do to redirect our hope. And the first is this: reject self-reliance. Reject self-reliance. Is it not easy when we feel helpless to kick into self-survival mode? How many know what I'm talking about? We do it. We kick into self-survival mode. We pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. We sometimes, when we feel helpless, get more prideful, when we actually should become more humble and in humility. And in that pride and in that self-reliance, we actually make our problems more difficult. We make it more difficult for what we're going through. We get stuck in our problems. I want to tell you this. The antidote to self-reliance is prayer. It's prayer. But make a comment on that. There's a difference between wishful prayer and hopeful prayer. Wishful prayer is foxhole prayer. God, get me out of this mess I'm in. I'm inconvenienced by the difficulties that I'm feeling. I'm inconvenienced by these people. I got myself in this mess. Hurry and get me out. We make those kind of prayers. Where hopeful prayer is based on God. It's based on who He is, that confident expectation that God will be faithful no matter what. Jesus asked the man, he said, "Do you want to be well?" And his response was, "Well, if I can get in the pool, if I could get in the pool, then I'll be well." This man became, this is on your notes, this man became so focused on one solution, he was unable to see God's solution. We do that. We get our eyes so focused on one solution to our problem that we don't leave ourselves open to, "God, let your will be done in my life. However you want to solve this in my life, whatever you have planned for this in my life, let your will be done." And we do this. We think, if this would just happen in my life, then my problem would be solved. If my spouse would just change, or if I just get the right job, then everything will change. Or if our finances would just, if, instead of just a simple holding out your hands and saying, "God, I'm helpless, but I'm not hopeless. I'm helpless, but I'm not hopeless." And so prayer then becomes the lifeline of the helpless. It's just continually laying before God your heart, your life, your needs, everything before Him. What we need to do to reject self-reliance is this. I need to give up control. I need to give up control. How many control freaks are in the room today? Good, I'm in good company because I should lift both hands. We like to control circumstances. But self-reliance really believes deep inside that we can control others and circumstances. We believe that in self-reliance. We think we somehow can control circumstances or people. Recently, my family and I were on our way home from Phoenix. We were on an airplane, and it was a small plane to start with. I didn't like that. But outside of Phoenix, when you fly from Phoenix to Denver, outside of Colorado Springs, the stewardess was telling us that you always go through these weird air pockets. And my daughter was sitting to my left, daughter in front of me, my wife, son here, and all of a sudden the plane went, you know that feeling? Your stomach drops. And I grabbed my daughter like this, and her eyeballs popped out, and I was hanging. "Hi, everything's good. It's so good." And then we went again. I was like, "Oh, are you kidding me?" And all of a sudden, this little boy, he was probably 4 or 5 years old, sitting behind my wife, goes, "Wee, Mommy, it's a roller coaster." And I thought, this little boy's never seen the beginning of Lost before. He definitely hasn't seen Airport or one of those old movies. He has no clue. He's thinking he's on a roller coaster. And I'm over here just, about to die. And we think, I knew in that moment I was unable to control my circumstances. I'm buckled in this plane, you know, just hanging on and squeezing the life out of my chair and my daughter's arm. But what happens when we need to give up control is we have to realize something. Usually, when we're self-reliant and we start controlling people and things, it's because we have a blocked goal. We think life should go one way, or people should do something in our life to make us feel okay or to be happy. And they shouldn't do this. Circumstances shouldn't be this way. And these circumstances and people are blocking our goal of having a good life, of being okay, of feeling happy. And in that blocked goal, we can become very manipulative. We can even use prayer as a form of manipulation. We can start praying, God, would you change him? God, just change his heart. Change her heart. Change it. And we're trying to get God to change somebody. And our motives are usually wrong anyway, because we just want to get out of our difficult situation. This person is inconveniencing my life. And so we're praying for him from a wrong motive. And God wants us to have hopeful prayer, not a different kind of prayer. This happens a lot in spouses who have maybe husbands or wives who drink too much. And they'll come and ask somebody, hey, would you pray that my husband would stop drinking? And yeah, I understand the motive behind that prayer. Drinking too much causes problems in everybody's life. But a lot of times when we're praying that prayer, we're inconvenienced by what their action and behavior is doing. And what you have to understand is God doesn't make people do what they don't want to do. He doesn't do that. See, God's the only one that can be completely sovereign over the universe, completely sovereign over eternity, past to eternity, future, and still give you and I a free will. If I'm sovereign over your life, then I'm controlling you. He doesn't control us, but he gives that he doesn't make people do what they don't want to do. So we need to just give up control. And how you do that is to say, God, what's a goal that you and I can accomplish together that does not depend upon the other person? Because if you're depending upon another person for your goal, you're setting yourself up for a struggle. You're setting yourself up to have a blocked goal. All right? Next thing we need to do is avoid spiritual legalism. To reject self-reliance is to avoid spiritual legalism. Legalism, in most raw definition, is thinking that we can merit God's favor and forgiveness by what we do and don't do. And if we were to all be honest, we do somewhere in our mindset, because we do this to each other, we project this on God. God, if I do this, then now you're obligated to do that. God, because I did this, in our mind, you should be doing that. God's not obligated to do anything. He's God. He, you know what, and what, however God responds, it's out of a perfect love and a perfect holiness and a perfect knowledge of the beginning and the end. We're working from a very limited knowledge of the beginning and the end, very small. And that's where surrender comes in, and we avoid that from God. The second thing we need to do when we feel helpless is reject self-pity. Reject self-pity. How many have ever had a pity party? How many have ever invited other people to come? How many people's pity party turned into a conference? Let's have a conference on pity party. Sometimes it feels so good to feel so bad. And I want you to know that I'm hurting. I don't feel good. And I need somebody's sympathy. Oh, and I'll just look somber and hope somebody catches. Oh, yes, I'm so. We need to reject that. God does not want us to walk in self-pity. Feeling sorry for yourself is probably one of the biggest emotional drugs known to man. It becomes a narcotic for us that we feel sorry for ourselves. And it's once that pity rises up on the inside of us, it's hard to shake. It's hard to shake once it's taken root in your life and you become a victim. And it's always somebody else's fault, or you know, it's somebody else's problem that you're in your problems. It's reasons for that. Jesus asked the man, he said, do you want to get help? Do you want to get well? Jesus asks us today the same question. Do you want help, or do you just want to complain about your problem? Self-pity complains about problems. It just complains. It doesn't say it's going to be an answer to the problem. It just likes to complain about the problem. Self-pity results from focusing exclusively on self rather than God. We focus on ourselves rather than God. And I want to challenge you this morning without prayerfully, hopefully, not sounding in the slightest bit like I'm belittling somebody's struggles, because some of you today have serious things you're going through and you feel helpless. And so by what I'm about to say is not trying to be trite or insensitive. I just want to be real. Compare whatever it is you're going through to what Jesus went through. That'll refocus your heart and your perspective like nothing else. Listen, Jesus went through our worst nightmares out of love for you and for me. He experienced betrayal. He knows betrayal, worse betrayal than we've experienced. He understands humiliation. He understands just the sorrow. He's a man of sorrows. He was physical pain, unbelievable physical pain. He endured being separated from his Father out of love for you and me. So whatever it is you feel helpless or what you're going through, it doesn't compare to what he went through out of love for you. Let that redirect you and remind yourself always, when you feel helpless, my hope is not in this life. My hope is not in people. My hope's not in the right job or the right amount of money in my checkbook. My hope is in eternity with Jesus. And I'm convinced that one of the reasons we struggle in this life the most is because we, deep in our minds, think this is heaven. This isn't heaven. Have you figured that out? We're journeying through to get to the place where there is no more pain or sorrow, sickness, or any of the things that we feel helpless with. We are journeying through to get there. Remind yourself all the time, this is not heaven. We're passing through to get there. Self-pity leads to blaming others. When Jesus asked the man if he wanted to get well, it's funny, he didn't say yes. He didn't say yes. He blamed others. He said, well, if somebody would help me in the pool, if I could just get first in line, then yeah. But he never actually said, yeah, Jesus, what's your answer to me being helped here? And you know, we do this. We say, you know, if my parents would have just been better parents, life would have worked out different for me. Or if my boss would just stop treating me the way that he treats me, then everything would be okay. If my husband or my wife would change, and we blame and we blame and we blame. Listen, the first step out of blame is to ask, what can I do with God's help to make things better? God, what can I do with your help to make things better? How can I be part of the solution with your help? And it's important to grab a hold of that today rather than blaming other people. Blame is an attempt to escape responsibility. If I have you to blame and I'm a victim, then I don't have to take responsibility for my life. Just check with kids sometimes on that one, you know. Why is the backyard that way? Oh, well, see, what happened was, and then the neighbors, and then this, and then you told me to come in, and nope. Take responsibility. That's what we should be trained from, but we're not. We fight that. We need to remove the plank from our own eyes to get the speck out of somebody else's eye. Start with yourself. Take responsibility. And then I can reject self-pity by practicing what we call look-around therapy. I like this. Look-around therapy. Look-around therapy is this. There's always somebody worse off than you. You know that? You don't have to look far. There's always somebody worse off than you. And so when you feel helpless, I think there's two ways you can practice this look-around therapy. First of all, might sound a little strange, but you need to laugh. Have you ever laughed at your problems? That's one of the most healthy things you can do, is just sit back and have a good laugh. That makes me feel better. What are you going to do about it? I mean, getting mad about it and throwing a tantrum, does that ever change anything? I want to show you a clip, video clip, that I found on YouTube. And you may have seen this before. But I want to show you a clip about laughing and how to laugh sometimes at your helplessness. Dad and daughter had a knee slapper together there. That's classic. And you know what's the story behind that? You know what they were tearing up? That man got a letter of rejection from a job that he wanted more than anything. So together, he and his daughter said, hey, let's laugh about it. Let's laugh and know that something else is coming down the pipe here. God's got something better for us. Sometimes you got to laugh. When you feel helpless, another thing you need to do is serve. Serve somebody. That'll help you get your eyes off your problems and yourself when you serve somebody. I remember I read a story about Dr. Robert Schuller, the guy that's the pastor of Crystal Cathedral. And he was out of the country one time, and his daughter got in a motorcycle accident, and she had to have her leg amputated. And so he rushed back from the country that he was in, came to the hospital room where she was at, and as he walked in the hospital room, he saw just this stump of a leg up in traction and the blood on the end of the gauze there and everything, and got a lump in his throat, and it's like, what am I going to say to my daughter? I mean, I could imagine as a parent, what am I going to say? How do you respond to seeing your child go through difficulty? And as he walked into the room, his daughter immediately said to him, hey, Dad, I've been lying here thinking about all the people who have lost arms and legs and all the people who have had bad things happen to them. You know, there's a lot of ministry to be done among those people, and that's what I'm going to do. That's how you take bad things and work them for good in your life. That's how God does it. You comfort those with the same comfort you've received from God. I want to tell you about an opportunity that's in our midst right now. And I want to challenge those of you that this is hitting home about feeling helpless today and you want to serve some. We all should do this, but you in particular need to serve. Every year we do what's called the block party over at the Carr Street campus. And the Carr Street campus is over between Wadsworth and Kipling off I-70. We have church services that are there. It's where Faith Christian High School is. Pastor Ruben Magana and his wife and daughter and team of people have used that facility and used this opportunity to reach the single moms, some single dads, people in lower incomes and difficulties, to just be a blessing, to just go do some look around therapy and know that somebody else is worse off than you, and to do it in Jesus' name and for His glory. Last year, over 780 people came to the block party. There was 120 volunteers. There was 500 backpacks that were given to moms to give to their kids who couldn't afford to get school supplies for their children. 500 backpacks, 900 meals, 125 haircuts. Ladies that are beautician were cutting hair, and ladies were feeling all pretty about themselves, and they were giving manicures and pedicures, whatever that is. I know it's good. They were getting massages. They were at a health care. It was a little health care clinic. There was a bike repair, a clothing bank that was a huge success. They ran out of clothes in an hour and a half. So people were just sucking up the clothes, man. And there was prayer happening. One lady gave her life to Christ. There was 5 cases of Bibles given out. This year's opportunity for us to do it again is Saturday, August 6th. We need volunteers. Ruben is out in the atrium today. You can go find he and his wife and daughter, and they'll sign you up and give you an opportunity to do some look-around therapy. And also on your way out, our ushers are going to have some buckets. And we're doing our dollar days today. where if you have a dollar or some spare change or more than that that you can spare this morning, every penny of that is going to go to fund these backpacks and all these things that we're going to do on August 6th. So it's a great opportunity for you to jump in, okay? How does Jesus help us when we're helpless? First, notice what Jesus didn't do. I was thinking about this. Jesus did not offer to help him into the pool. Jesus did not encourage him that someday you'll be first. Hey man, I promise one day you'll be first in line. Sorry. Jesus didn't make him more comfortable where he was at. Don't we want that though? And Jesus didn't argue with him about his theological shortcomings. We like to do that sometimes. He didn't do that. How does he help us? Well, Jesus saw him and knew how long he had been ill. And we can let that hit home with us right now. Jesus knew his conditions. He knows yours. He knows what you're going through. He may feel a million miles away right now, but he's not. In faith, you say, Lord, I know you're near, and I know you have an answer to this. Take your helplessness to his throne. How did Jesus, how does he help us? Well, he told the man, he said, get up. Look at your notes. Get up, he said. Jesus challenges us to do the very thing we can't do for ourselves. He's challenging you today to get up and do the very thing that you could not do for yourself. And I was thinking about this in letting this hit home for us. What's the most humble statement in all of the Bible? People would talk about maybe the meekness of Jesus or something that Jesus said. I was thinking about this. Humility is a right perspective of yourself, others, and God. Not false humility of, oh, no, no. You know, humility is a right perspective of God, yourself, and others. I believe the most humble statement in the Bible is this: I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. If that's true, I can do whatever it is I feel helpless about today through him who gives me strength. I want you to write on your notes. Write this. I can, and then draw a blank line through Christ who strengthens me. I can, and then a blank line through Christ who strengthens me. Wherever it is that you feel helpless today, put that in that blank line. Some of you, it might be, I can forgive through Christ who strengthens me. Some of you, it might be about your finances. I can believe God through Christ who strengthens me. Some of you, it's relation, whatever it is, whatever you're lonely, I can overcome loneliness. I can overcome anything. I can go through whatever because it's through Christ who strengthens me. Whatever he's called you to do, he will equip you and strengthen you to do because it's his power. Jesus asked the man, do you want to get well? One commentator said this, I provided it for you on your notes. The first essential toward receiving the power of Jesus is the intense desire for it. If in our inward heart we are well content to stay as we are, there can be no change for us. The desire for better things must be surging in us. The Apostle Paul knew about this, 2 Corinthians 12. Paul talks about having a thorn in the flesh, a difficulty in his life, and he asked God 3 times to take it away. And God didn't take it away. God responded to him and said, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. You could put the word helpless there. My power is made perfect in your helplessness. Listen, glorify God in your helplessness. He loves to work through that. Then he told the man, take up your mat. Jesus removed the temptation to go back, to quit, or to relax. To pick up your mat meant for this man a possibility of losing his spot in line. You ever been in a long line somewhere? Last thing you would do if somebody asked you to get out of line is be like, I need to see some credentials. Who are you? I mean, you're in the airport line. I was there one time in Omaha, Nebraska, of all places, doing a wedding. And it was right after 9/11. You don't think long security lines in Omaha, but it was crazy. And I was late, and the groom's waiting for me, and I'm standing in line, and I could picture some guy come up, I'll take you to the front of the line. Let me see the badge. You know, let me see how are you getting me there, because I'm not just going to go. I could forfeit and go to the back of the line. That's what this guy was having to do. Jesus was challenging him to go, that possibility was there. He's saying, stop leaning on this crutch that you've relied on. Your mat is whatever crutch you rely upon when you're uncomfortable, to be comfortable. What crutch do you rely upon? Jesus says, take up that mat. Your hope's in God. Your hope's not in the mat that you're lying on. And then lastly, he told him to walk. Jesus expected continued success. It wasn't going to stop there. Our hope and our confidence will be in Jesus, not in self or circumstances. Listen, faith is doing what God tells us to do, believing he is who he says he is and who I am in him. Faith is believing, is obeying what God says to do, believing who he says he is and believing who I am in him. That hope in that activates our faith. So I want to conclude with this. Where are you feeling helpless today? What are you hoping in God for? Where do you need a breakthrough? And let me ask you a question before you start ruffling around. I'll get you out of here quick, I promise. Where are you being self-reliant? And where are you having self-pity? Reject both of those and redirect those emotions back to the God of hope. What I thought we could do is conclude by going old school today. What I mean by that is stand to your feet. We're going to read a scripture out loud together, congregationally. We're going to read it as a congregation and let God put hope in our hearts, rise hope up in our hearts together. So we're going to read Isaiah 40, 28 through 31 out loud together. It'll be provided for you up on the screens, or you can look at your notes. Let's do this. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. Let's give God praise today. I want to pray for you as you go and just pray some scriptures over you, and we'll go. Would you lift your hands to heaven and receive this from God? May our Lord Jesus Christ himself and God our Father, who loved us and by his grace gave us eternal encouragement and good hope, encourage your hearts and strengthen you in every good deed and word. May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit.
We hope that this message has spoken something personal to you. If you would like more information about our church family or service times, please call us at 303-424-2121 or visit us at our website, www.fbci.org. Faith Bible Chapel currently meets in our Family Worship Center, located on the corner of 62nd Avenue and Ward Road. We'll be right back.